Morning. Glad that all of you could be here today. I want to continue this morning with where we've been the past couple of weeks on some of the lesser known names of Jesus, and or some of them that we use a little less. And today what I want to look at is from the first reading that Jack read just a minute ago. The very first phrase of that is what I want to unpack today. He is the image of the invisible God. Now, I know that's a little more of a description than a name. You don't go around, you know, like call somebody up and say, could I please speak to the image of the invisible God? You know, that's a name. But it's still, it's part of his title. It's one of his titles. As I was looking at this, noticing that Paul was writing to the Colossians, I was reminded, I don't know why, but I was reminded of where he wrote that from. And he was sitting in prison in Rome when he wrote this letter. And the way that he got there was pretty, to put it mildly, remarkable. He had been in Ephesus and was teaching, and the crowd really got mad at him. They rushed at him. They were going to, probably going to kill him, you know. And the Roman guards came in and kind of saved him and took him off, and he was going to be in a lot of trouble. And so they asked him, you know, what did you do? What's going on? What's the charges? And there's all kinds of things. There's like a riot. And it was incredible. Just from Paul teaching about the Christian faith. I mean, can you imagine this? There's that famous, well, maybe you've never heard it. There's that famous quote from the Bishop of Liverpool once. when Paul used to go to towns that have riots, when I come, they serve tea. You know, he was quite, I don't know what he was thinking. But nonetheless, there you are. There's Paul. Now, that's just the beginning of how he got into prison in Rome. He, you know, the people are trying to get him. The Roman guards finally have to take a guard, you know, a bunch of guards, whatever that was, in the Roman army, and give Paul a horse and put him in the middle, and they're surrounding him, and off they go to prison in Caesarea, you know, quite a ways away, and he's in prison there, and he's going to see the governor, Felix, because he said, you know, I'm a Roman citizen. So, you know, that really got him in trouble. So there he is in Caesarea waiting for the governor, Felix, to come. And I tell you, that emperor just took his time. And Paul is sitting there in a prison doing nothing day after day, after day, after day, after day, and on and on and on. And Felix finally arrives in town, and Paul continues to sit there day after day after day while he's in town. And they finally get to hearing him, hearing his case, and Paul says, I am a Roman citizen. So Felix says, you know, after all this time, and all this trouble, I mean, this might have been the case. I kind of lose track of, because Paul was in so much trouble all the time. This might have been the time they were out to kill him. They let him down over, they kind of snuck him out, put him in a basket, and put him over the wall so he could run away. I don't remember. But anyway, you get the idea. He was in a lot of trouble. And so Felix says, okay, to Rome you appealed, to Rome you shall go. So, you know, they get the Roman soldiers out again and the horse and everything. They surround him, and off he goes to Rome, where he is in prison. You know, he's under house arrest. There's a lot more private prisons, I guess, in those days than public prisons. But there he was, Roman guard all the time. And it's more the same. If he's not severely mistreated, it is day after day after day of absolutely nothing, because he was teaching the Christian faith. Now, he was allowed visitors, and so this one visitor named Epaphras shows up and says, you know, Paul, that church in Colossians that I started, a lot of trouble there. I have no idea what to do. So Paul writes the letter to the Colossians. And in fact, he had two visitors in that time, because Paul apparently couldn't write or something, so he called for a scribe to come and take his dictation, which is how he wrote his letters. He dictated it to somebody else, and they wrote him down and gives it to Epaphras, and Epaphras goes back and reads it and all that. And one of the incredible things that really struck me about this time looking at it is here's Paul, another close brush with a violent death, incarcerated several times, no charge yet, brought all over the place. I mean, not just from one end of the town to the other, but all over the area there in the Middle East, up, even up to Rome. there was no jet airline in those days. It was tough business. And he finds out that, and he's alone, an occasional visitor, and he's separated from the churches that he started, that he'd really come to love. All of that was going on with him. Just because he got in trouble for teaching the Christian faith. And then he writes this. He, meaning Jesus, is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation. For by him all things were created, in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities. I don't know. I don't know if I'd let the guards read that. You know, if I'm in prison and I'm in that much trouble. But there they are. All things were created through him and for him. This became a hymn in the early church. It is a hymn of praise to Jesus as the one through whom everything was created. I mean, usually you don't think of Jesus as the creator, but he is actually the creator. Several places in Scripture say that. And here is Paul praising Jesus for who he is, what he's done, and all this, while he is been in prison, often solitary, for who knows how long amount of time, and he knows he's facing a death sentence. I don't know. What do you think? What if it was you? I mean, if it was me, and Epaphras shows up to me and says, you know, could you write a little something to the Colossians? I would write, help! Get me out of here! But he didn't. He turned his entire focus onto Jesus and the excellence of his character and the greatness of who he is and how he is in all, over all in all, and all things are by him, through him, and for him. Incredible. Absolutely incredible. Now, what that points to is how powerful this description of Jesus is. Now, they're all powerful in one way or another, but this description as the image of the invisible God is extremely powerful, and it means something directly for our lives. Now, the word image that's in English here, the Greek word is icon. And you know, we take that directly from that ancient Greek right into English, and we have icons. You know, I mean, in the Eastern Orthodox Church, there's a lot of icons. And in a lot of Western churches, there's icons. They're different places. And an icon can mean, you know, that kind of art. It can also mean the representation of something. So it's to be the representation of God. An icon of the Trinity is a representation of the Trinity. An icon of Jesus is the representation of Jesus. And it is a representation in this, particularly in the case of Jesus, who is the icon of the invisible God, is that he is the presence of God. He is actually God. That's exactly what Paul is saying here. It's exactly what the New Testament is saying. And so when you see Jesus, you see God. When you engage with Jesus, you're engaging with God. It's like Terry Fulham used to say, Jesus is God with a face. Just what it means. Now, there are some things that we can take out of this that apply to us. And one of them is this. You know, when Paul was writing to the Colossians, Epaphras comes and sees him and says, you know, there's some trouble here in the church. And part of the trouble was false pictures of Jesus. And there are some false pictures of Jesus around today. I'm sure you and I don't dabble in that sort of thing, but nonetheless they are. For example, one of them is this. This is a false picture of Jesus. That Jesus is a good teacher. And usually what that means is that Jesus is a moral teacher. He teaches morality. Now, what I would like to point out about that is that anybody who taught what Jesus taught would not be considered a moral teacher. Just wouldn't be. I mean, the person who really articulated that the most was C.S. Lewis in his wonderful book, Mere Christianity. He says, anyone who said what Jesus said is either a liar or a lunatic, or he's actually the Lord. I mean, somebody who says, no one comes to the Father except by me. We don't ascribe high morals to that sort of a thing. We think that person's got a problem. But that's exactly what Jesus said. Or how about this one? I am the way, the truth, and the life. Now, somebody who says that has a problem, or is crazy, or they in fact are the way, the truth, and the life. But no one ascribes the moral high ground to teaching like that. This is the kind of thing that was going on in the church, the Colossian church. It's around in our society today. And what we are committed to and carrying and following is the one who is actually the image of the invisible God, who is the center of everything. I mean, this is one more comment about being a good teacher. If Jesus is a good teacher, you know, teacher of morality, then you can kind of argue with them, disagree or not, think, well, that could apply here or not, all that. It's a take it or leave it with you in the middle, you in the center, you calling the shots. But if he's the Lord, then it's him calling the shots. Okay, enough of that one. Let me just give you one more. And then I'll make some other applications also. You may have heard people say that, well, God is this way. I believe God is like this. That God made creation, set things in motion, and then stepped back and kind of lets us have our way and doesn't interfere too much unless it's absolutely necessary. There's a lot of people who think that. And that's been around for a long, long time. It's kind of like if, God was a watchmaker and creation was like a watch, just wound it up and let it go. Now, there's a lot of people who do think that. They want to be on their own. I understand that because I want to be on my own. You know, I don't want anybody bothering me. Especially God, you know, he's really tough when he's after you. Nonetheless, there you are. It is classic deism to say that God created things, set it off in its path, and let it go, and doesn't bother with it too much. Now, to say it's classic deism is to say it is not the Christian faith. One of the names of Jesus you will remember, we're not going to look at it this summer, but one of the names we remember is Emmanuel, God with us. God is with us all the time, everywhere, no matter what's going on. Wherever you are, there are at least two people there, you and God. There might be some more, but God will still be there. Everywhere you go. If you're going somewhere, God was there before you got there. He is with you all the time. He understands exactly what's going on with you. He knows the exact heartache and pain that you're feeling. He knows everything that's happened from the height to the depth, from the darkest period of your life to the time that was the most joyful. He was there in all of it, in every second of the time, right there with you, never letting you go. For what can separate us from the love of God? And there's that long list that Paul has. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. And God himself does not decide to step back and say, well, I set it in motion and off they go. I think it'll work out. It's just not the way that it works. It's not like we're on the bicycle with training wheels. It's running with us until we're ready to go. That's just not it. He's always, always with us. Never separated from us. Even if you turn your back on him, he's still there with you. Okay, well, think about those things. You know, let them roll around. What I want to do is make a few other applications. You know, what does it mean for Jesus to be the image of the invisible God? Well, do you recall one of the descriptions of humans in the Bible? Children made in God's image. We are the image of God. You and I are the image of God. We are made and created in his image. Now, here we have Jesus as the image of the invisible God, and then we have us as the image of God. I kind of think there's some overlap in here. Does that seem right? Yeah, there's something going on here with Jesus as the image of the invisible God and us as the image of God. And it really has to do with this. When you are engaging with Jesus, you are being transformed into his likeness. When you are engaging with Jesus, you're engaging with God, as we've mentioned. When you are doing what Jesus does, you're doing what God does. When you are walking with Jesus, you're walking with God. And in that way, you are building and enriching the image of God that is yours, that you already are. And there's a way that that happens. There's a way that that builds within our lives. And it is this. It is to take the rhythms of Jesus and make them our own. And you're familiar with these rhythms. Maybe you'd flunk the multiple choice quiz right now, but you're really familiar with these rhythms. Worship, like we're doing today. Fellowship. We're going to have the potluck afterwards, and there's other times of fellowship that you have, just seeing Jesus in each other and things that we do, and then outreach into the world. Those basic rhythms and the way that God specifically asks you to do it is how you walk with Jesus, how you engage with Jesus, and how you become more like Jesus. And those rhythms are essential for that. And it's essential not only individually, but in a group. For example, when the park is going along, you know, that the missional community we have right over here in the park, that group that meets there, there's a time of worship, there's a time of fellowship, and there's a time of outreach with that group. And as that is going on, that group is becoming more like Jesus. And as they're becoming more like Jesus, they're taking on more the image of the invisible God. So what happens? That group makes the invisible visible to the park community around it. When you are individually and personally engaging with Jesus and those rhythms are incorporated into your life, what is happening is that you are making the invisible visible to people around you. When Symphony gets together at the Symphony Assisted Living, and they go on Sunday morning and bring communion and worship and things like that, and do other things that are going on, visiting the residents at other times during the week, taking part in things in their lives, and some of the big things in their lives, like their funerals and so forth. Those are the rhythms of Jesus that are going on with that community, and the group that goes there is making the invisible visible to the residents of the Symphony Assisted Living Center. That's what you and I are called to. That's what it is to fulfill our creation as part of the image of God, is that we make the invisible God visible to people around us in one way or another. Now, the big question, probably, I'm thinking, well, if that's what we do, how do we do it? Now, this is the big thing that I want you to get this morning. If you want to jot it down, that'd be great. Whatever. Your habits are more powerful than your commitments. Your habits are more powerful than your commitments. And because I'm trying to be nice, I sometimes call habits rhythms. Your rhythms are more powerful than your commitments. Now, just think about all the times you're trying to lose weight, and you're committed to losing weight. But your habit of eating certain things at certain times is more powerful than your commitment. Am I right or am I wrong? Right. You get the picture here? And that is true with every aspect of your life. What you are habitually doing will take more power to overcome than your commitments. You will slip on your commitments sooner than you will slip on your habits. If you begin taking up rhythms, habits of Jesus, you will find that the result of your life is your richness as the image of God increases. And you begin doing what Jesus did, which is making the invisible visible. Making God more real to people around you in ways that you maybe never imagined. It is far more powerful than making a commitment, for example, to say, I'm going to read through the Bible in 1 year. No, if you want to do that, please, do that. Do that, but I'm just saying that a rhythm where part of what you do is just take in the Bible regularly will be more powerful than trying to say, I'm going to read the whole Bible in 1 year. That's my commitment. Whereas a rhythm of, I take some of it in regularly, every day or something. It's like breakfast or whatever. I worship. I just do it. It's a habit I have. When I see things in around me, my neighborhood or where I work or wherever, I just look for God. I've just been doing it. There's no commitment to try to get something done. You're just with Him. It's a habit of being with Him in those things. And that's where the fruit starts coming. That's what it means to us when Paul writes that Jesus is the image of the invisible God. So, here's my challenge to you. There's two levels. One is this. I challenge you to let go of the commitments you cannot fulfill. You're free to let go of them. Just release them, let them go. If you can't do it, let them go. I'll write you a note later if you want to. You want me to have one? I, I do have a doctor of ministry degree. It'll be a doctor's note. You'll have it. Please excuse. You can, whatever. Let it go. So that you can take up the rhythms that bring you life. You just get the habit of looking for Jesus by worshiping, by connecting with other Christians, and by seeing Him in the world, and maybe joining in if He prompts you to. And then maybe joining in with one of our groups, or maybe starting a new one, where a group of people are doing the same thing together. Okay, is everybody okay? Did you ever hear a pastor ever say you can let go of your commitments, just forget about it? That's fine. You heard it here first. It's because I want to see you be more like Jesus than I want to see anything else. Would you please stand? We thank you, Lord Jesus, that you are the image of the invisible God. And that you draw us to be like you, enriching the way that we were created. And we ask that today, your power and your grace and your life would fill us to take these steps with you all the days of our life. Amen.